Welcome to the Life Over Coffee podcast, conversations for transformation.
Pornography is a pervasive sin in the sense that outward behavior, the viewing of porn, speaks to a heart idolatry that is not evident at first glance. When we talk about pornography, we have to understand that it is a multi-layer problem. And we want to help people in a comprehensive way. And so understanding that there is no discontinuity between what the person is doing externally, the viewing of porn, and what is going on in the heart is absolutely critical if you're going to help them to work through it. Now, there is no question that there is wisdom in cutting off porn behavior. We call that behavioral modification, and there is a lot of wisdom in behavioral modification. Jesus talked about it in Matthew 5. In verse 29 and following, he said that if your eye offends you, pluck it out. He went on to say, if your hand offends you, cut it off. What is he saying there? He's saying that we need to behaviorally modify our sin. Now, he's speaking in hyperbolic language. I would not want anyone to think that you're supposed to literally do that. But when Jesus speaks hyperbolically, he is really making a point here that we do not want to miss, that we want to behaviorally modify our sins if we want help, if we truly want to be free. But we also know that if we really, really want to be free, that we have to root it out at its source, which implies not just behavioral modification, but we have to identify the idol that feeds the porn addiction. Now, what you're going to find when you're helping a person stuck in any bad, sinful habituation, you're going to find that there are probably a multiplicity of idols that are operative in the person's heart, and you'll find that to be true in the porn person's heart. Let me give you just a couple of illustrations of heart idolatry, and the point of what I'm presenting to you here, it's not about identifying ruling motives of the heart. I want to talk about something else that's tied to porn addiction. In fact, I want to talk about what every girl needs to know. If you're dating someone and you're seriously talking about marriage, you need to listen to what I'm presenting to you. If you are married and you find out that your husband is in a porn addiction, you really need to understand what is going on, what I'm about to present to you. But just in passing, it is important to know that this is a multi-layered problem, that there are tears operative here. And so that means that there is heart idolatry in play. Some of those heart idols could be such things as, let's say, comfort, the idol of comfort. The way that that would work out, maybe you've heard of comfort food. The wife who has had a bad week, a bad day, bad month, bad life. That she has created a habituation of escaping through eating food. We use euphemistic language like comfort food because that's the way we like to think about our sin. We want to round the corners off of it. Take the edge off just a little bit so it will be palatable to our ears. Well, the danger in that, one, it's not precise language, and we really want to be precise when we're talking about our sin problem so we know exactly how to deal with it. Number two, we can dull our consciences to the degree that with this euphemistic language that we don't even hear what we're saying any longer. Our consciences become dull, and then we find ourselves in a deep habituation of comfort food. The idol of comfort we're talking about, and the idol of comfort is most definitely operative in the porn person's heart where he's looking for that escape. He worships the idol of comfort, and he uses pornography as a mechanism to experience that comfort for a brief season. Also, it could be the idol of respect. Respect can become an idol. It's a good desire. A husband would want his wife to respect him. Nothing wrong with that if it's just a desire. But sometimes our desires can metastasize and be full-blown idols to where we demand that you're going to respect me. And the marriage is hostile. That they are combatants, they are competitors, that it's not a biblical marriage, and now this good desire that he had for respect has metastasized, and now it's a full-blown idol. How does that work out in pornography? Well, pornography, in a large part, is about the theater of the mind. It is a fantasy world where the man is living inside his own head. You see, he's not talking to any woman on the internet. There's not a dialogue going on. She has no clue that he even exists. He is merely using her to create a script in his own mind so that he can act out these theatrics in his fantastical world. And so he can make her respect him. He can satiate the idol of respect by this theater of the mind that's operative in his heart. So he can satisfy the idol of respect through pornography. Another idol could be control. You can kind of see that as I was describing respect. He can control the woman on the internet. He can make her respect him. And so the idol of comfort, the idol of respect, the idol of control, all three of those could be entangling his heart. You may also find the idol of power and the idol of reputation. There are many idols that we like to worship. And so it's important that we understand that there is more going on here than what meets the eye. Now, again, I am not dealing with in this particular piece here about rooting out the idols of the heart. I'm just making the case that it's vital for those of you who are caring for a person who is caught in pornography or caught in any habituation, that you understand that there is more happening with the person in porn than what meets the eye. Because porn is an external problem, you have to look underneath the behavioral sin to see the pervasive nature of it. And there will always be at least one idol that feeds our behaviors. We're not loyal to just one idol, and sin is never so neat. It'll never play so nice that it'll compartmentalize itself. No, sin will spread out, and you'll find the idol of comfort or the idol of control, the idol of respect. It'll manifest in many ways in our lives, not just one. And so when it comes to pornography, you want to be in tune to how these idols are operational in a person's life. And one of the reasons that that's important, if you could imagine just for a moment, when a wife learns about her husband's porn problem, she probably will not connect those dots for obvious reasons. I have seen this so many times. The devastation of what she just found out will be intense, and typically her heart sinks as her mind wanders. And when it does wander, she will more than likely be thinking that his problem has something to do with her. And that's why she needs to know that she's off track at that point. It's going to sound harsh to say this, but it has nothing to do with her at all. This is all about him and his self-centeredness. The untethered mind might say, I'm not satisfying him physically. Instead of thinking of his deficient and depraved life, she'll begin to punish herself with thoughts about not being what he needs, which is why he chose porn. It seems counterintuitive for her to consider how this problem has nothing to do with her. And my desire here is not to be unkind. I definitely don't want to be harsh. But where can we go from this point? Every step forward from this point, when you find out that your husband or someone is in pornography, every step you take is going to be harsh. It's going to be unkind. It's going to be deep weeds. It's going to be dark. It's going to be painful. There is no way through this but to say some difficult things. Now, we can say them without being unkind, without being mean-spirited, but we must say them because she has to know. I mean, once that stronghold takes her mind captive, it will be hard for her to break it, even though the Bible could not be clearer. Nobody can cause another person to sin, and she needs to hear that loud and clear. No matter what that sin is a choice. She didn't make him. It's not because she's not beautiful enough or not physical enough or whatever it is that she's thinking and wherever her untethered mind might go. There is no permission for any husband to explain his sin away or to dump it on another person, including his wife. We are personally accountable to God for our actions. The devil made me do it. My wife made me do it. those statements won't wash with the Savior. You cannot gaslight him. You're not going to make him believe those lies. He just won't. Therefore, you don't want to believe those lies either. In 2 Samuel 12:13, it says, David said to Nathan, I have sinned against the Lord. A beautiful, succinct way of explaining what just happened. When he sinned against Bathsheba, Nathan confronted him about it. Now, we know that David sinned against Bathsheba. He sinned against his wives. He sinned against the nation of Israel. He sinned against Uriah and so forth. But David was so clear-headed when he did come to his senses. After God had granted repentance, he put it in the most succinct way. No, this is between me and God. I have sinned against the Lord. And then as you read his repentant prayer in Psalm 51, in verse number 4 specifically, he says, against you, you only, have I sinned and done what is evil in your sight, so that you may be justified in your words and blameless in your judgment. David's heart must be every man's starting point if he wants help with his sin. The harsh truth is that the porn guy is not thinking about his wife at all, except for how he is lusting after her. It's all about gratification. It's all about instant gratification. It's all about using someone, anyone, to bring sensual pleasure to himself. Addicts are users. Like someone addicted to drugs, there is no way his wife could ever measure up to his sinful cravings. No wife could. For the porn guy, his wife is just another body for him to find lust-filled pleasure. He has no loyalty to anyone but himself, as though being married means something more than satisfying his lust. It doesn't. That's what it means to him. Part of the wife's struggle is that she will be thinking about biblical sex rather than porn sex. Listen to the distinction. You see, when she finds out that her husband is in porn, she'll be going down a biblical sex avenue. And that's what would make it so devastating, because she doesn't have a porn brain, a porn mind. She's not thinking like him. They are not in the same universe. And that's why she'll have a hard time thinking rightly about the problem. She needs her mind to snap into the right track to understand what is really going on. That's why she might succumb to the temptation to believe that it has something to do with her. She's thinking about biblical physical intimacy while he's acting out porn sex. Those acts are two different things with two different objectives altogether. To get a biblical view of physical intimacy, Paul gave us a clear-headed message in 1 Corinthians 7. In verse number 3, he begins by saying that the husband should give to his wife her conjugal rights, and likewise the wife to her husband. For the wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. Likewise, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. Do not deprive one another, except perhaps by agreement for a limited time, that you may devote yourself to prayer. But then come together again, so that Satan may not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. Paul was clear on what biblical sex was supposed to be. Biblical sex is always about the other person. Biblical sex is about the other-centered attitude of the gospel. You remember what Jesus said in 10:45 of Mark? I didn't come here to be served. I came here to serve. That is what gospel-centered physical intimacy is about. Giving graciously to the other person. There is always a direction to our desires. Either those directions curve back to ourselves, that is self-centered, or the direction goes from us to the other person. Physical intimacy and the gospel-centered orientation of it goes from the subject to the object. In the case of the person in pornography, he is the subject and he is the object. When the wife understands this truth, she knows that it wouldn't matter who she was, what she had, because, again, not to be harsh, but it's not primarily about her. I mean, yeah, it should be about her if her husband understood and applied the gospel to his marriage, but that's not what he's doing. He is sinning, and his sin is self-centered. There is little difference in the porn guy's mind between his wife, an internet porn star, or a prostitute. I am not saying his wife's a prostitute. I'm not saying that his wife is an internet porn star. But I'm saying there's little difference in his mind between those three people. I am speaking of the hideousness of sin. As I said earlier, where can we go from here? There is not a step that you can take where you will not be in a swamp, in deep weeds, in darkness, in the briars. It hardly matters who becomes the object of his lust. It's all about sinful passion. This problem is a real-world travesty that is decimating the Christian community. We know that it has already decimated the culture at large. It's in their movies, it's in their TV shows, it's in their commercials, it's on the billboards, it's everywhere we look, it's in the mall. No matter where you go, sex sells, and it is everywhere. It is ubiquitous. We even give our children phones when they're 6, 7, 8 years of age. We weaponize them so that they can get to the naked women in a half a second, literally. And imagine a child that's introduced to pornography as an 8-year-old, which is what parents do. Here, son, I want you to view pornography, so here is a phone for you. And now you can get to it. Do you think children are that dumb? And do you think children live in isolated chambers, disconnected from the culture? No. They know how to work around. They know how to access pornography, and parents facilitate that. They create the conduit by giving them phones so they can see this pornography. If it takes 21 days to form a habit, well, now this child who's 10 is now 35, and so for multi-decades now, he's been habituated in pornography that his parents obliged him by giving him a phone so that he could access it. It is decimating our community. But when it does, and when that wife, when the daughter-in-law finds out what her husband is doing and realizes that he has been doing it since the day his parents weaponized him and gave him that phone, she needs to understand what's going on. When that single girl is dating this boy and this relationship is moving toward marriage, there are some deep conversations that they have to have, transparent conversations. I don't recommend that you have these, what I'm sharing with you, with any dating relationship, because there is an appropriateness here. But as you're moving closer to the altar, or you have already passed the altar and you are married, and you realize that your husband is now in pornography, these things you must understand. And so with that said, every wife needs to know that she does have a sexual role in the marriage. He may not be thinking about her, and it may not be about her, but it is about her in this sense, because she should be an active participant, not just in the physical relationship, but also in the marriage. And so the wife wants to emulate the gospel as well. It's not just the man having a gospel-centered understanding of marriage and physical intimacy. If she is gospel motivated, then she wants to apply Paul's teaching, because a biblical wife knows that her body belongs to her husband. And while the spouse may not be the cause of the man's choice to look at porn, I clearly stated that over and over again, she can tempt him to look at porn. And this distinction is critical. You have to hear that I'm not blaming her for his choices, but there is a difference between making him choose sin and being part of the temptation to the decision that he has to choose sin. When he does choose it, you can be part of the problem. There are things that she can do to lure him into looking elsewhere when it comes to sex. I want to share with you three of the more common ways a wife can tempt her husband toward lust. Not the cause, but she can be a temptress. These are things that I have seen repeatedly as I've counseled thousands of people over several decades now. Number one, and not in any particular order, but she can disrespect him by complaining, nagging, demeaning, or withholding encouragement. Men are not as strong and unfazed as they may want you to believe. Men can be real babies, including me, when it comes to craving respect. I talked about the idol of respect earlier. I said that it is a good desire, and it is a good desire. And a wife wants to make sure that she satisfies that desire. She wants to help. She wants to come alongside him so it doesn't metastasize. It's part of a man's identity. We want people to appreciate us, to respect us, especially for what we do. Our Adamic wiring is from the Lord. Doing stuff, taking care of things, is how God made us. A wife who does not understand this and withholds her respect and admiration from her husband can tempt him to desire appreciation from other places and other people, including pornography. And without being redundant, I'll say one last time, she's not the cause, but she can tempt him. Number two, withholding sex is a big no-no in marriage, too. This warning was from Paul. One of the best ways a wife can show her admiration and love for her husband is by wanting him physically. This desire to want to be wanted is another weak area for guys. They want to be wanted sexually by their wives. A wife who wants to be intimate with her husband, she is honoring him. And number three, many women do duty sex because of the conflict in their marriages. Their marriages aren't great, so she just does it. It's what I call duty sex. They reluctantly honor Paul's request not to withhold, because Paul said don't withhold, but for a season and with agreement. But they don't engage their mates in the moment of physical intimacy. They hope that he will experience satisfaction soon and it will be over soon. She's sending a clear statement to the husband that she doesn't desire him. And that can become a source of temptation. I realize many wives are listening to this, that they are frustrated women. I get it. Again, where can we go from here without stepping in the swamp, in the darkness, in the middle of the night? When I talk about how things ought to be, some women will respond in anger. I know that there's a complicatedness to what I'm talking about here. And I'm speaking about one thing, not the 15 things. And I get that. And no doubt what I've said here will be a source of frustration to many women who feel trapped in marriages that seem to have no hope of changing. To talk about their failing marriage would be beyond the scope of what I'm sharing here. I wish I could cover everything in a comprehensive manner. I talked earlier about the ruling motives of the heart, and what I'm going to share with you is not about identifying those motives and rooting them out. Well, now I'm talking about the greater scope of the marriage, and I can't talk about all the complexities of marriage problems here in this short piece. I'm only talking about one area. And so I do hope that if you have this struggling marriage, one, don't be frustrated. Two, go to lifeovercoffee.com. And do that deeper research, because I have written on all things marriage. I have a marriage book called Get Ready. I would recommend that you get it and get ready for a wonderful marriage, because it can happen. It is possible. But what I'm dealing here in this piece is for ladies who want to marry a guy, but they do not understand the comprehensiveness and complexities of porn. I am speaking down that, I'm in that lane. I'm on that track. And I hope that many soon-to-be married ladies, that they will listen to what I'm saying here, that they will get the book that this chapter that I'm sharing with you is a part of. That free book on our website is Sex, Temptation, and Modesty. I think that's the title of it. But it's a free book, and you can have it. Go to lifeovercoffee.com, and what I'm sharing here, plus there's a whole lot more in that free book. Go to our store and download it and take it. It's yours. I produced it for you because I hope that what I'm sharing here will help you to avoid the pitfalls, the future pitfalls of marriage. I mean, if your marriage is already in the pit, then you need help in other ways. And as I was saying that, there are truths that you have to interact with, and at some point you have to do the hard things to change your marriage. And what I'm saying here is one of those hard things, but there is more, and I would encourage you to go to Life Over Coffee and dig deeper into the comprehensiveness of your problem, more than what I'm just sharing here in this narrow track. But again, I'm speaking mostly to single girls who are about to get married and they're heading toward the altar, and they have to understand that pornography and sex has decimated the Christian culture, and this is a part of your boyfriend's life. And you need to understand these things. And I hope that as you move closer to the altar, you can have these deeper and more raw conversations appropriately with him. You see, in Ephesians 4:22, Paul says to put off your old self, which belongs to your former manner of life, and is corrupt through deceitful desires. Some people believe that all you need is salvation to overcome a porn addiction. I wish that were the case, but it's not. The issue is more complex than just getting saved, and I don't mean to trivialize salvation, regeneration at all. But Paul provides us with a clue when he talks about our former manner of life. For example, the majority of people who get into porn before God regenerates them. Though God saved them at a young age, they were not fortified. They were not equipped to understand and resist porn. I talk about parents who are conduits to pornography as they give their children devices so that they can access porn in a half a second. Maybe it was imposed upon them by a knuckleheaded friend as they look at their devices in school or wherever, or as they look at their devices together, though online in cyberspace. Perhaps they just stumbled upon it. A typical statement that I hear from older guys after they come out of porn is that they were not honest with their future wives about it. They were not transparent with others. You see, porn is a secret sin. I can't even do podcasts and videos like this. I can't write books on it or put it on social media because it's a shameful sin. And people sneak to look at porn, and they sneak to find content to overcome porn. And that's why I want to say these quiet parts aloud. That's why I want to appeal to these soon-to-be wives that you talk to your guy as you get closer to the altar with all appropriateness, because porn has been a part of his life, one degree or another. It is a part of everybody's life. And so we have to know these things. These single guys may tell their soon-to-be wives that they looked at porn, which most guys have to admit because of the ubiquitous reality of it. But they will withhold some of the facts, especially if they still struggle. The girlfriend is satisfied with his humble acknowledgement, and they move on with their relationship. And then 10 to 15 years later, she catches him in porn. What I have just described is the most common scenario for porn in marriage. It would behoove any young lady to be more inquisitive, though I think many of them do not want to know, especially after the engagement and just before the imminent wedding. Many of them struggle with, what am I going to do now? I don't want to call off the wedding. And so they bury their heads in the sand and they pretend that this problem will go away. It won't. And because it won't go away, not without intervention, I want to give you a few probing questions that any couple should be willing to work through as it relates to pornography. These questions, warning, they are explicit. And they're only intended for the couple on the verge of marriage, not for any random dating couple who is not serious about or strategically planning on marrying each other. And perhaps if you're already married and you haven't had this conversation, then I trust that these few questions would be a template for you. Question number one, that the girlfriend who is about to get married is asking her boyfriend, or a wife is talking to her husband. Number one, have you ever looked at porn? Now, the answer to that, 99% of the time, the answer is yes. Number two, how much porn have you viewed? How often did you look at porn? What were some of the ways you enjoyed porn? Number five, why did you do it? Number six, who knew about it? Number seven, who did you seek to help you? And I trust that they did. Number eight, when was the last time that you masturbated? Number nine, why did you masturbate? Number 10, how often have you masturbated this past year, the past 5 years? And then number 11, what accountability measures do you have in your life to help you work through pornography and masturbation? Now, questions 6, 7, and 11, they will reveal to you how honest he is, because it's rare for a person to defeat porn alone. Question 6, who knew about it? Question 7, who did you seek to help you? And then question 11, what accountability measures do you have in your life to help you work through pornography and masturbation? And so how he answers those questions will pretty much tell you where he is regarding pornography. If he says he's overcome porn temptations without anyone knowing about it, well, that's possible, but it's rare. If he humbly sought help from a spiritual mentor, then you know he has been thinking rightly about the problem and what it takes to overcome it. If you talk to the person who helped him, maybe that would be instructive and reassuring to you. If you do go down that path, I would appeal to you to find an older woman in the church, a mature woman, a woman in a good marriage, and ask her to walk with you as you do due diligence to try to understand what is going on in his life. Because here's the thing, after you get married, you're going to want to come alongside him and help him. You will be his primary disciple maker in the future. Don't wait in the future when you realize that he's in porn to become his disciple maker. If you are nearing the altar today, then start becoming his disciple maker today. And this is one of the most important question sets that you can ask him. People will always seek to put their best foot forward. And when it comes to porn, you do not want to take any guy's word alone. There is too much at stake. In one sense, I wish that you could go with me and be part of counseling sessions that I've been part of for a long time now. And if you saw what I saw, if you lived on the underbelly of Christianity where all this yuckiness is, you would be as serious about it. You would be as direct as I am. And if you were in the marriage, there would be no holds barred. No, you would be asking these questions and you would be doing due diligence. If you can talk to another person and get their insight, that would be wise. If you can find an older lady of the church, someone that you could talk to start the conversations. If your boyfriend is humble, he would be more than willing to tell you all that you want to know. He would do that appropriately. He should do that appropriately. I mean, a fool will reveal his entire mind. Some people don't have a social filter. Some people just blab everything to anyone. Discretion is a thing, and discretion is important. And so there's a fine line here. There are two ditches on the other side of the There's a ditch on each side of the fine line. And so we don't want to be totally tight-lipped about what's going on in our lives. And we also don't want to be so blabby that we just tell everything. And so discretion is important, but we must have these conversations. The humble person has nothing to protect, has nothing to hide. Your questions and his answers will tell you quickly who you are dealing with and where he stands with God and you. If he becomes angry, defensive, evasive. Well, it's on you if you marry him. Everybody has a former manner of life. We're born in sin. And because of adverse shaping influences, the things that have happened to us, the poor choices that we have made, sin gloms onto our lives before we encounter the Savior. There are no exceptions to this rule, making it vital that we do not self-righteously condemn another fellow sinner, especially when their sin is not as socially as acceptable as ours. I mean, our idol of comfort, we can tongue-in-cheek say that, well, this is my comfort food, and we can make it sound better, and then you can have another person struggling with the same idol of comfort, but it works out as pornography. And we become condemning of that person and treat them like they have the plague. In one sense, all sin is the same in that any transgression, no matter how big or small, will put Christ on Adam's tree. In James, he said in 2:10, "For whoever keeps the whole law but fails in one point has become accountable for all of it." The murderer and the gossiper, they're the same in that both have sin. Consequentially, obviously, they are different. If the only two sins that you have as options to sin against me, then gossip about me, don't murder me. But from an ontological perspective, all sin is the same. Notice how Paul does not make a distinction between a murderer and a person who sins with their tongue. There is one category we're all guilty before God. Paul says this in Romans 1. He says, "They were filled with all manner of unrighteousness, evil, covetousness, malice. They're full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, maliciousness. They are gossips, slanderers, haters of God, insolent, haughty, boastful, inventor of evil, disobedient to parents, foolish, faithless, heartless, ruthless." Now, we know that some sins are weightier and have different consequences, as I was saying. But there is no contradiction here. It is two truths about our sinfulness. In one way, all sin is the same. In another way, they are not. The consequences for some sin can be severe. Regardless, the truth is we all have our sins, and hopefully we are agonizing before God. We are seeking His help, as well as the help of others, so that we can overcome our sinfulness. It is common for a brother to struggle with porn. It's sad to say that, but we need to say this. I think sometimes in Christianity, we have a discretion or a deportment that doesn't allow us to go there. We do not permit ourselves to go there. We have church clothes. We look a certain way. We present ourselves in that most favorable light. We don't like to reveal those things that are about us. And again, I'm not talking about revealing our most darkest, deepest, darkest secrets to anyone, but we need to reveal them to someone. And if you are a young lady and you're about to get married, you're going to marry a fellow sinner. You need to do due diligence. It is common for a brother to struggle with porn. It is common for a sister to wrestle with beauty insecurities. Both of them are the same in that they are mocking Christ by seeking satisfaction outside of His gospel-filled provision. Sinning as a saint is more natural than one may think. Therefore, as Paul said in Galatians 6, "Brothers, if anyone is caught in any transgression, you who are spiritual is every Christian. You have the Spirit. The person who is not born again, they are dead. The natural person doesn't understand the things of God because they are spiritually discerned." And so when Paul says, "You who are spiritual," he's talking to every believer, and he says that you should restore him in a spirit of gentleness. "Keep watch on yourself, lest you too be tempted. Bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. There is one more dynamic to this conversation that I want to insert right here, and that is the Galatians 6, 1 and 2 factor, the verses that I just shared with you. Paul is talking about an addiction here when he says, if anyone is caught in any transgression, it is possible for a young man to be addicted to porn, or to use Paul's language, to be caught in any transgression. There are millions of Christians who are caught in sin today. For example, there are women who are stuck in anxiety, unforgiveness, bitterness, anger. And sin has captured men in porn and drugs and many other sins as well. There are men and women trapped in the bondage of identity issues. The man regarding his work, he's made too much of it, it's his identity. The woman about her appearance, she's made it too much, it is her identity. We are addictive people, and it is native to become caught in sin. We should not be surprised by this, because that was the purpose of Christ coming, to save us from ourselves. Sin is destructive. Sin does not discriminate. Satan has one objective: to kill, to devour. And being a Christian does not automatically insulate us from his devices. We can be a mess at times, but we do not have to be discouraged. Christ has overcome the world with a little wisdom, a little faith, a little perseverance, and a few insightful questions. You'll be well equipped to move forward in your marriage. I've titled this, What Should a Single Girl Know About a Guy Struggling with Porn? I have talked in an explicit way. I've talked in the raw. I've shared with you how once you find out that, one, you have to guard your mind because it's not about you, it's about him, that he is self-centered, satisfying his own gratifications. But I've also talked about how you have to think about this comprehensively. You have to take that step forward into the darkness, into the swamp. I've tried to be kind. I did not want to be harsh, but I wanted to be clear, and I wanted to be direct. Because once you're in this place, we have to talk real at this point. And so if you're about to get married, you need to have this conversation with your boyfriend. If husbands and wives, now you're married, you haven't had this conversation, it is something that you need to talk about. And of course, if you have children or getting ready to have children, you need to be on the same page, because your children are going to be confronted with more pornography than you ever could imagine. It's not going to get any better as far as the opportunity that is out there. Therefore, we want to fortify ourselves so that we don't become that conduit that feeds pornography to our children. We don't want to give them the ease of access, because the access is already quite easy. I'm going to wrap up just by asking a few questions here. I trust these questions will be helpful to you. There's only four of them. Question number one, how would you help a wife break the stronghold of thinking her husband's porn is because of her? That is a significant stronghold that can develop in her mind. The untethered mind will go there because, again, she will be thinking about biblical sex, not porn sex. She doesn't have a mind for that. She won't think the way that he thinks, and her mind will catch her in a trap, in the wrong track, and that track can create a stronghold in her life. And so the question is, how would you help her to break free of that stronghold? Number two, how would you help her to see that she may have fueled his temptations, even though she is not the cause? There's a tension here, and you have to deal with the tension. You're not the cause for his decisions, but we can tempt people. Maybe I can put this in another illustration. I talk about my relationship with my dad as a child. I ended up being in jail when I was 15 years old. I was a very angry teenager. And for many years, I blamed him for my condition. It was his fault because I sinned. That's how I thought about it. Well, that's a lie. No, it was my fault. I chose to sin. It was 100% my fault. I made those decisions to be, one, an angry teenager, two, to do drugs, to do a few other things that ended up me being in jail. But that was all on me. Those were decisions that I made. But it would be intellectually dishonest to say that my dad was not an adverse shaping influence. No, he was a tempter, but not a cause. And so we want to make sure that we're being honest in this discussion. And so I'm balancing the discussion out, saying that this is not the woman's fault because he chose to get into pornography, but she could be culpable in some way. Question number three, why is it critical for a girlfriend to know about a guy's sin history with porn? Now, again, I want to caveat that with appropriateness and with discretion. There is that fine line between disclosing things and not sharing your full mind about all your temptations. But it is crucial for a girlfriend to know about a guy's sin history with all discretion and appropriateness. Why is it so? That's the question. Number four, how would you help her resist self-righteousness should she find out her boyfriend or her spouse or a wife finds out her spouse struggled with pornography? How would you help her to resist the temptation to elevate herself above him, looking down on him, which is the last part of the section that I was sharing with you, that we don't want to have a self-righteous mindset because we're all addicted to something. We all struggle with sin. I've titled this, What Should a Single Girl Know About a Guy Struggling with Porn? It is one chapter in my book, Sex, Temptation, and Modesty. Please get that book. Let others know about it. Read this chapter and all the others, and I trust it will be a benefit to you.
Thanks for joining us. Learn more and get access to other resources at lifeovercoffee.com.